tomorrow is my 20th wedding anniversary with my beautiful wife, Gloria. 20
wow.
years married,
2-0.
Brad, tomorrow. 2-0.
That's amazing.
It is. I'm incredibly excited for it because we were looking at photos last night, kind of reminiscing over what the 20 years have brought us, you know?
Yeah.
And I found photos of us both 18 and 17 at our high school prom. That was a fun one to see. And then I found some photos from 28, and then I found some photos from 38, and then I found some photos from 40s. And I got to tell you, looking through the photos, I realized my wife has not changed at all. She has gotten more beautiful. And I, in contrast, Brad, am the portrait of Dorian Gray up in the attic. I'm not Dorian Gray. Let's make that very clear. I'm
That's
the
right.
portrait up in the attic. She has
just
married the portrait.
And-
yeah, just looking like I'm taking the brunt of all of Dorian's problems.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how I got an ageless beauty as a wife, and she got the old sea hag from Popeye. Just
that's not fair. You're not the sea hag. That's ridiculous. Pluto, maybe.
Pluto. wait, hold on. Wasn't there a this is totally skipping topics, but you know how what was the show that had the Bewitched, right? The show, and yeah. there was two husbands, right? Two Darrens.
Two Darrens, yeah.
And frankly, as a kid, I didn't notice the difference. That's how dumb I was.
Really? There was a huge difference.
Popeye had Bluto, but he also had Brutus, right?
That's right. I always thought of him as, you know how in Greek mythology it was Zeus, and in Roman mythology it was, I forget what, Saturn or something. But they it was the same gods, but they had different names. I always thought like Brutus was the Greek version and Bluto was the Roman version.
Because if there's one thing Popeye is known for, it's rolling in classical mythology into his story. Oh, yeah, that was pretty good. Hey, look at Popeye.
Well,
well, we're not going to get better than that, so I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics, I'm Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his pal Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is brought to you by our Patreon backers at Comic Lab. That's patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave! Let's talk comics.
I got to tell you, as a friend, that was delightful to see that your eye must have skipped the line of copy right there, because for the first time ever, you had like a senior moment. And today's Comic Lab is brought to you by our friends over
I thought I covered it so well. I thought I was really doing well.
What a
I was
delicate
like that,
dance that was.
I'm like, it's like that drunk that thinks that he's walking so carefully, no one knows he's drunk. I couldn't find my sheet. I've got it in here somewhere, and I'm like, oh, I've done this 100 times. I don't need to see anything.
I'm going to plow right through this. This is fine. Everything's fine. All right. Well, I got to tell you, Brad, today, as our sponsor, Bonjoro.com, Bonjoro.com is back with us again today. I got to tell you about...
Yeah.
I've been sending out a bunch of Bonjoros because I released a new magnetic Build Your Own comic set on my store. And
I've
been selling really well.
That.
And so I've been sending out a lot of Bonjoros because, as you remember, anytime an order comes in or anytime someone joins me on Patreon or anytime someone buys my original art, I get an automated alert via my Bonjoro app on my phone saying, hey, record a quick thank you and welcome message, or, you know, a thank you for purchasing message. And so I turn around in my studio, boop, hit the camera on my phone, and I record a quick personal message like, hey, Brad Geiger, it's Dave Kellett. Oh, my God. I just want to say I saw you got the magnet set. Great. Anyway, Cardboard Crack had joined us on patreon.com/comiclab, and I had sent him or her, I don't know, a message. And they wrote back, wow, the curmudgeon in me always thought, Bonjoro, who cares about a personal message? What a waste of time. Yeah. And then I saw your message, and I absolutely melted. Wow, that was amazing. Thank you so much. And so I got to tell you, this is the kind of thing that you get from Bonjoro. You're like, oh, this won't make a big impact. No one will care. But something about in our impersonal world that someone, after you make a purchase or after you join Patreon or after you get some original art, they send a personal, immediate, heartfelt message to you, Brad Geiger, from me, Dave Kellett, not like some automated thank you for making a purchase at my store. It has a unique emotional response that almost can't be quantified. And so many of these people then go on to buy more stuff. It's incredible, frankly.
And if you'd like to see how Bonjoro can work for you, just head over to Bonjoro.com. That's Bonjoro.com. You can sign up for a 14-day free trial, which is pretty standard. You can check it out, see how you like it for yourself. But it gets even better for Comic Lab listeners. If you're a Comic Lab listener, if you decide to sign up for Bonjoro, you can get 20% off Bonjoro for life. All right, so listen to this. After your 14-day trial is up and it's time to seal the deal, look for the coupon field and enter Comic Lab April. Comic Lab April entered into that coupon field entitles you to getting 20% off Bonjoro for the rest of your life. And for as long as you're going to use this, it's a fantastic opportunity. This is a tool that you're going to be using for the rest of your career as a cartoonist. And you're going to get 20% off just because you're a Comic Lab listener. And we can't think of a better thing for you to be trying out. Give it a try for 2 weeks. If it's a good fit for you, you get 20% off just because you're listening to this show.
And once again, that's Bonjoro.com at Bonjoro.com.
So, Dave, let's start off the show. We've got a great question to kick it off with. And this one came in from a friend of the show who wants us to talk about NFTs. These are non-fungible tokens. This kind of comes in under the same heading as like cryptocurrency, although NFTs are not cryptocurrency. But it's along those same lines. So go ahead. What did that email say when it came in?
Well, so this friend didn't. I didn't check with them to see if I could use their name before the show. So with apologies, I'm just going to read the note. That's the most important anyway. It says, "Hi, Dave. Hope all is well. I've been reading a little bit this last week about NFTs. It works like a blockchain token, but is actually a digital asset, either an image, a video, etc., which can be sold like a physical original piece of art. Mark Cuban and Gary Vaynerchuk have been speaking out about them recently, and there could be an opportunity for web cartoonists to find another revenue stream for their work. Also, it looks like Marvel is looking into it." And then the emailer kindly links to a couple articles about NFTs.
Yeah.
So Brad and I want to talk about it today because there's a lot to unpack about NFTs. First of all, let's talk about the name, Brad, because non-fungible tokens includes probably one of my favorite words in all of English, fungible.
Fungible. Oh,
Brad, do you want to take everybody on the magical tour of what fungible means? Because it sounds like it could be a foot fungus. It sounds like it could be a kids show character that's like a fat tubby cat or something. You know, you don't.
It sounds like you open up your lunchbox and there's a little plastic sealed mushroom and you say, "Oh, Mom packed me fungibles again."
It sounds like a unique, you know that transition diaper that's not a diaper, it's not shorts, it's like pull-ups?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, now you're wearing fungibles.
You big boy, you.
Yeah, you've got your big boy fungibles on. That's great.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of like, we had a earlier, this might have been on Pro Tips, but we kind of talked about this in a certain way in terms of, is there a way to sell digital art as an original? And this would kind of be that same conversation. This would be selling a digital original as an NFT. Okay.
Right.
And when you look up NFTs, it's hard to really get your head around it. This is from Coindesk.com. "One of the main benefits owning a digital collectible versus a physical collectible, like a Pokemon card, is that each NFT contains distinguishing information that makes it both distinct from any NFT and easily verifiable." It goes on to say, "Unlike regular cryptocurrencies, NFTs cannot be directly exchanged with one another. Think of them as a festival ticket. Each ticket contains specific information, including the purchaser's name, the date of the event, and the venue. This data makes it impossible for festival tickets to be traded with each other." All right, so that's kind of what an NFT is. The question is, do we want to look into using them to try to sell digital originals, or how if any way are we going to use this as independent artists?
Right, and so I want to say that I get the idea, and it's sort of similar to in-game assets that you can, like, you're willing to buy a skin for $5 or a unique power battle sword for $1.50 or whatever it is, whatever sort of in-game power-up you can buy that's unique and makes your character stand out more. You know, it's like a limited-time skin or something. I get it. I understand that there's a value for a lot of people, not me, but a lot of people in buying unique, like, in-world digital assets, right? So I understand that that's a thing, but I have to say something about the idea of NFTs makes me feel like the oldest old man on the porch shaking my cane, because even if it could work, even if I could specifically make it work, I don't know that I would want to make it work, because I don't know that I would want to sell someone one of these. And I understand that that immediately makes me sound 150 years old. I just don't. I guess I'm saying I don't want to be involved. This is not what I want to do. Brad, what's your immediate first take reaction?
My immediate first take reaction. I read that email and it said, and it looks like Marvel Comics is looking into this. So I'm like, all right, that puts you into a certain mindset. Marvel Comics is looking into this, right? So I go to the story, the post, That is about a Spider-Man NFT sells for 12.75 ETH as Marvel Comics artist lands.
Is ETH Ethereum?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's like Bitcoin, but it's a different system. But yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think
it's
Ethereum. The source here is Cointelegraph.com. Now listen to this. Listen to this lead. With great rarity apparently comes great value, as Ethereum-based Spider-Man NFT just sold for $25,000 as Marvel Comics enters the blockchain realm. Now, it goes on to say, a unique Spider-Man drawing by Marvel Comics artist Adam Kubert sold for 12.75 after being turned into a non-fungible token on the Ethereum blockchain, blah, 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 blah. A recent announcement by the Portion chain says that approximately 25 Marvel pieces are going to come. The first wave of artists are, and it names a bunch of other artists that have done or are doing work for Marvel Comics. And right there, I'm out. And I'll tell you why. Because Marvel Comics is not getting involved in NFTs. A bunch of freelancers who have worked or are working for Marvel Comics are looking into NFTs. And there's a huge difference between that and when somebody writes a story that says Marvel Comics is looking into this, and I can see with just a basic knowledge of how comics work that Marvel Comics has nothing to do with this, as far as I can see. A bunch of freelance artists are. That's when I'm being manipulated. And when I'm being manipulated, it's time to step back, because somebody's trying really hard to sell me something.
I had a reaction all planned to what you were saying. And then you said, but when I'm being manipulated, that's when Brad Geiger hits the road. Brad Geiger, one thing Brad Geiger doesn't appreciate is when Brad Geiger gets manipulated.
No.
I know what you're saying there, that clearly there's a press release behind that that's angling for a certain kind of story. I can see what this publicist is doing behind the scenes for this article. Yes, I agree with you.
Yes.
But I also would say, though, that it doesn't necessarily remove the point that these are independent artists doing this, because it actually, if anything, it strengthens cartoonists like ours' point that we could be using it as web cartoonists, as web-based cartoonists, right? So I think the point still stands that some artists somewhere, they happen to be working for Marvel, are selling digital art, right? And so that's the basic point of it.
Now, listen to this next part in the same article.
Okay.
Some of the NFTs come with added bonuses for would-be purchasers, such as, listen to this, original physical artboards and signed comic books.
Oh, well, Dave, wait a minute. Now, okay, I'm immediately out. All right, hold on.
Those aren't bonuses. That's the fucking merchandise.
That's what people are buying.
Jesus Christ.
All right, so let me get down to brass tacks on this. So I understand the idea that someone might want to own an individually, like the way I see EFTs working, or NFTs, sorry, working so far is like, I'm drawing 10,000 unique cats. Do you want to buy one of these unique cats? Look, this one's brown with black stripes. This one's fat with gray stripes, right? But each one is unique, yeah. And you'll get a blockchain version that tells you that your little special cat is unique, and hooray. That,
yes,
right?
Yes.
I've seen artists do that kind of thing. But I can imagine, very quickly imagine, you doing a very unique Brad Greiger drawing, and just there's only one of them, and it's got an NFT blockchain thing, right? But yeah. So here's where it breaks down for me. It's like, I know this makes me sound like an old man, but what the hell do you own? Great. You've got a file on your computer. You could maybe put it in world if you play Second Life or something, you can put it as a painting in one of your Second Life rooms.
You can put it on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what do you do with that? Like, I know this makes me sound like a Luddite, but like, one of the purposes of art is to have it and share it and own it and enjoy the physical nature of it, that an artist touched this object and their hands made this mark. And now look, it's up on my wall, and you're sharing a little bit of their physical presence in the world by their physical presence on your wall or in your sculpture garden or whatever it is. Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So for me, the digital, it just feels less special. It just feels less useful as in the way that art should commonly be enjoyed in our life. And I know that makes me sound like a Luddite, but something about this just doesn't sit right with me. And I'm actively working out why I'm so angry about it as we're talking about it.
Listen, so part of it is like, if you own the original art from a Spider-Man comic that you really liked, right? And you can point to the Spider-Man comic and you can say, this is the original art. This is what it took to get that.
Right.
There's something to that when you've got the original art. When it's a digital file, at least right now at this point in history, it's not as special as having that as a physical thing. And we may get there in 10 or 20 years. But pointing to a file on your computer and saying, that was the original file that they used to print that. It doesn't have the same kind of power. And I think that's kind of what that's where I am right now, is that right now it does not have that power. It might down the road when nobody's working pen and ink and everybody's digital, or most people are digital, then it might change. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. A lot of this stuff with BitCurrency and NFTs and all this other stuff has an aspect of, you'd better get in on the ground floor. You're going to be missing out if you're not in on the ground floor. And that's another thing that I've learned over the years, is that this whole get in on the ground floor thing, 8 chances out of 10 is pointless. Like, there are a couple times when it would have been nice to be on the ground floor. It's unquestionable. But most of the time, this whole get in on the ground floor mentality is trying to, again, it's manipulation. It's manipulative. It's trying to get you to rush a decision that maybe you should be thinking more about. Here's the upshot of all this. Let's say at some point NFTs take off and people are actually buying these NFTs for digital art. Well, if that actually happens, and by the way, not at Christie's, where they had an original art auction that sold for thousands and millions of dollars, because that whole aspect of fine art, that doesn't apply to people like you and me, right? We're talking about two different things. If that starts to filter down to everyday working independent artists like you and me, there'll be lots of opportunities for us to jump on once it's been proven and it's out there for a while. There's no reason to rush to get in on the ground floor on this that I can see. Am I wrong?
Well, so here's my follow-up questions to this. So an NFT, does it have within its metadata an ability to tell the software that it's being displayed on not to be able to take a screenshot?
Well, yeah, that's the next question.
Within our lifetime, not even within our lifetime, within the next 5 to 10 years, we will have iPhones with 8K and 16K screens, which are virtually indistinguishable from an object of real life printing in terms of quality to the naked eye. And if I take a screenshot of an NFT that someone paid, a Spider-Man that someone paid $10,000 for, I just effectively stole a $10,000 digital piece of art,
right?
I mean, like, what value do they have? It's not. Go ahead. I'm cutting you off.
No, I'm agreeing with you 100%. It's got no value because if 1,000 copies of a piece of art are circulated, but you're the only one who says, well, I own that art, even though everybody can see it, then there's no value because there's no scarcity. And right. as we know over and over, scarcity is one of the prime ingredients of value. And if everybody, right. that's why it's important.
And then, so let me ask you this, Brad, let's just continue this conversation about NFTs.
Yeah.
If I sell you an NFT right now of a drawing that I did of a duck, right?
Right. Right.
Am I then morally obligated as the artist to delete my file once you have the NFT?
Oh my
and I'm not
God.
Joking about this.
Do I hadn't am thought I, of that.
Am I morally obligated to remove the file from my computer and delete it and trash it so that I cannot on my death give it to an archive, or I cannot on my if I have a divorce settlement that someone could claim that file on my computer? I'm just saying, like, because now it has a $10,000 value of Ethereum, which is also bullshit. But
well, for our legal team, we don't know that Ethereum is actually bullshit. It just sounds.
Hold on, I'm just being slapped on the back of my head by a lawyer. So we're just for a quick disclaimer, Ethereum is not. We're not making any claims or disclaims about Ethereum.
We don't know how many lawyers that cryptocurrency can actually buy.
Unfortunately, a lot right now. What I'm saying is, am I morally obligated to remove any digital trace or any digital reproduction that I own of an art that I sold you as an NFT? Because it seems to me that if I still have a functional Photoshop file, then that NFT is useless, right? That's not
right.
You're not getting what you're promised, which is the unique and sole copy of that piece of work, right? Oh,
you can go right down the rabbit hole on this because I, and part of it is that you and I really don't have a complete understanding of NFTs. For example, if part of it is that in creating the NFT, it uses up that file and now the file isn't there anymore. You know, that might be part of it.
Oh, that
but
might be part of it. Yeah, I could see that.
With cloud computing, there is no such thing as a single file anymore. You've got the file. It's also on Dropbox. It's also on Google Cloud. It's also on Apple. there's no such, is there any, I mean, for any of the serious work you do, is there any instance in which you only have one file?
Right. Well, and here, okay, so not to again be the Luddite about this, but so a really unique problem that the Library of Congress and the Smithsonian are having right now is that the file that you create right now that you think this will be a forever file, this is no problem at all. Well, right now, the Smithsonian and the Library of Congress are actively looking at laser discs, you know, the giant ones before CDs and DVDs. And they're like, holy shit, we have to buy old machines off eBay so that we can somehow move this format to a modern format. And then they're going to have to do the whole thing again 20 years from now, right? There's no eternal format, right? What I'm saying is if I buy a Drabble original. I don't know why I picked Drabble.
Because you're tired of picking on Ziggy. We're going to pick on Drabble now for a while.
No, let's go back to Ziggy. If I buy a Ziggy original and it's one of my favorite Ziggy's, Brad, you remember the punchline. Yeah. Go ahead. You remember the punchline.
Oh, yeah, that was the punchline where he's looking at the parrot and he says, you know, one good thing about having a cracker is you've always got a friend.
I want everybody to know, I just put on Brad on the spot and just pointed, and he came up with a bad Ziggyism right there.
The only thing that I like about my couch is that it has a love seat attached. It's the only love in my life. I'm Ziggy.
I always like the self-introducing impersonation.
For me, there's something wonderful about self-introduction as the end of a punchline. I'm Ziggy. Just reiterating. Okay, so anyway, let's say I buy a Ziggy original, right?
Yeah.
No matter how the world changes, empires rise, empires fall, if that paper and that archival ink are still active and viable, if I've kept them away from light, I still have a viable piece of art, right? But if I buy a laser disc of a Ziggy, right, that's an NFT, and then I have to change it into a DVD data format, and then I have to change it into some kind of TIFF file, and 20 years later from that, and then I have to change it, like, what I'm saying is, what the hell does this NFT have as a value 100 years from now, or 50 right. years from now, or 20, even right. 20 years from now? Like, how are you going to update that file within that blockchain system and still have it be the original, if you know what I mean? Like, granted, it could still yeah. be the sole copy of it, I guess, but...
Well, I don't know whether I'm just repeating what you just said, but what if the software that unlocks that NFT goes out of commission?
Yes!
Is that kind of what you're saying?
It's like that guy in San Francisco that can't remember his passcode to that Bitcoin that's worth $200 million. Like, could be locked out of your own NFT is what you're saying, a version of what you're saying, right? You're like, well, shit, I paid $10,000 for the Spider-Man.
You would just sit there just for the rest of your life putting in, okay, let's see, I'm going to try 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That didn't work. All right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6. Nope, that didn't work. 1, 2, 3. I'll be here for a while. 1, 2, 3, 4, 7.
Hold on. Just have dinner without me. I'll come down in a minute, love it, honey. All right. yeah. But let me put what I think is the most final point on this, right? Is that the human touch is yeah. the central point of why I have a problem with this.
Yeah.
I will tell you with the art that meant the most to me in my life, Brad. I'm sure there is a piece that means the most to you in your collection. When Watterson sent Fred and I, the original art for that poster.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not kidding, Brad, when I say I had a tear-filled moment of electricity holding that piece of paper yeah. that Bill Watterson had slaved over for hours, right? And that yeah. I saw his pencil marks. I saw his finger marks. I saw there was a mark of a human behind that is what I'm saying,
yes.
right?
Yes.
There was is because it was connection. It's a form of connection when you buy original yeah. art. And so for me, the NFT feels cold. It feels sterile. It does not feel like a human connection. It feels transitory in a way that, like, a candy bar is not a meal. It's exciting for a moment, and it yeah. has energy to it, but it's not a meal, you know? And so I know I sound like an old man, and I know I sound like a Luddite, but NFTs don't have the human touch for me.
Yeah. Well, and listen, things are going to change as we go forward. There's going to be less and less original art that is made on paper with ink. It's just going to be. And at some point, just like there's things that have value now that we couldn't imagine having value 50 years ago.
Sure,
that's going to
sure.
happen again.
Sure.
But I think this is a really good time. Here's the thing. What's the final answer? The final answer is there's a lot of things that you can do and a lot of things that you should be putting your attention on as an independent artist today. This is one that you can kind of keep an eye on, put it on the back burner. I wouldn't spend a whole lot of time, put a lot of energy into it because there's a whole lot of other stuff that needs your attention right now that ain't this.
That is the beautiful bullet point to put on the whole thing, or the capstone to put on this whole thing. I think we can stop the conversation there. But I will say one epilogue on behalf...
but I will say this.
I will say this on behalf of future Brad and Dave, okay?
Yeah.
You might want to download and save this episode because in 5 years when Brad and I are selling NFTs, we yes. are going to absolutely delete this show from the archive so that there's no proof that we ever said that NFTs were a bad idea. So that's just so you know what kind of operators we are 1,000% yep. deleting this episode 5 years from now when we start selling NFTs.
I've said this before, and I'll tell on myself every time. Anytime you hear me talking about, you know, future stuff, I'm the guy. When the Kickstarter guy stopped at my table, I told him this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. Now get out of the way. I've got books to sell. And I'm not exaggerating much. I literally looked this guy in the eye and said, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. It's never going to work. So, you know, maybe take that with a grain of salt. Maybe I'm not the guy to listen to.
Yeah. Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics. So, Brad, in light of my 20th wedding anniversary, I wanted to bring up another topic that I thought about because it actually, looking through old photos, sparked a conversation with Glow and I about how when we first moved to LA and how we wanted it being a career so bad and we didn't know quite how to get there. And so I wanted to talk about that for you. I know we didn't really plan this, but I wanted to talk about it with you because I know you've got thoughts on it. So when we got to LA, we met and knew people that were 10, 15, 20 years further on in their career than we were. Right?
Yeah.
And so we knew what the goal was at the top of the mountain. We're like, we want to be there at the top of the mountain with you doing what you're doing. But we didn't know what path at the base of the mountain would get us up the hill. You know, we literally didn't
know.
What's our first step? What do I do first? How do I get there? And so I thought it might be a fun conversation, or at least a helpful conversation, if not fun, about how, when you know what your goal is, you see it in your mind's eye and you see it in other people's careers, the aspirational peak that you want to get to, but you don't know how to start up that mountain, what do you do? And so, first of all, before I give you my thoughts on it, Brad, do you remember that moment when you were 19, 20, 24, 25, and you're like, I know what I want to be. I want to be a cartoonist, but how the hell do I get there?
and I don't know that. So part of it, I'm a little bit jealous because I think you were more cognizant than I was at that age. I clearly knew what I wanted to do, but I don't remember ever saying, well, how am I going to get there? Other than for me, it was a series of small goals, small failures, and then readjusted goals and so forth like that. In other words, I don't know that I ever had the top of the mountain in view. I just had somewhat up the mountain and then somewhat further up the mountain. You know what I mean? I don't know that I ever looked all the way to the top. I just wanted to get a little bit up that mountain and then I was going to be happy. And then when I got there, it's like being up the mountain sucks. I want to be a little bit further up that mountain. And then I took up my tent and I started walking further up.
Can I tell you what I love as a friend is when I throw a topic at you that we didn't really talk or flesh out, right? And your attitude perfectly matches what I was about to say, because for everyone listening, I didn't pitch Brad on what I was going to say. And so this is my thought about how you start a career, which is, yes, of course, you know what the final goal is. You see the flag on the top of the mountain and you want to be there holding it, right? And waving and saying, I did it. But here's what you can do in your 20s and in your teens and your 20s and your 30s, or frankly, whatever age you are starting in, is when you are starting, you're not going to be able to immediately leap to the top of the mountain. But what you can do is the small, approachable, doable tasks that you can do right now, that is actually the beginning of the path. And it does not matter if you are immediately springboarding to worldwide fame or not. The idea is, what can you do? I can do a comic today. Great. You are moving your way up the mountain.
Do that comic.
What can I do this year? I'm going to do a body of work, either a short story, either a novella, either a collection of comic strips, either a graphic novel, or half of a graphic novel, whatever it is for you. That is moving up the mountain. And so what I realized, and it took me a couple of years of moving to LA, because you part of it is desperation moves. You're just like, I'll try this, I'll try this, I'll try this, I'll try this. And that's why I see this in younger cartoonists when they're asking us questions. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, no, that's a desperation move. You just work on the fundamentals and keep going. Because I know that because I was that. I did that.
Yes, you know what it looks like. You know what it smells like. You know what it walks like.
I know what it feels like at 2 a.m. when you're staring at your ceiling going, oh my God, am I fooling myself? I don't know if I'm meant to be doing this. But I remember, Brad, when I first moved to LA, and I don't know that I ever shared you this story. I saw an ad on Craigslist, cartoonist wanted for licensed t-shirt designs. Did I ever tell you this story?
No.
So... this is the desperation and the energy of someone that just wants to make it. I remember we set up a meeting, and this is kind of before everybody knew to meet at a coffee shop rather than to... I met at this guy's apartment, and he was like, okay, so here's what we're going to do. And he was like 2 years older than me, but it was that point in my 20s where someone who's 2 years older feels like, well, they've got it figured out. They know what they're doing.
Look at this guy.
And he hired me to do a bunch of cartoon designs. I don't think any of which he used. He paid me like $50. It was something terrible. But I wanted to be a cartoonist so bad that I was like, well, this is part of the path, right? I'm designing licensed characters for a t-shirt. Surely that's being a comic strip cartoonist. No, not really. But I was just so thirsty for it that I was like, yeah, that's fine. I'll do this. Yeah.
I'll take your untold story and I'll raise you one. There was a time when I came very close to landing a job because I was just so upset with newspapers at the time. And the writing was on the wall back in the 2000s about newspapers. And I almost took a job for a company that does coloring books and like those books of mazes that you get at grocery stores.
Yes.
But I would be drawing Marvel Comics characters and licensed, I'd be drawing licensed characters. And I'm like, oh my God, this is it. This is my step to the dream. Cause I'm sure Marvel Comics looks at those and they'll say, look at this guy. He does so good. We got to have him drawing Spider-Man.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I came this close to taking a job that would have just completely detoured and derailed me.
Yeah. And it's fun to look back. No, it's not fun. It's actually sort of like cringy, but to look back on the things that we did in our 20s. But part of it is you and I eventually figured out that the thing that we could control was the art that we produced. And the thing that we control was the frequency that we could produce it, right? And the thing that we could control was the quality that we produced that frequent comic that we could make. And so it's kind of a version of the advice that we got that we give to people now, which is focus on what you can control, which is the comic. Make a good comic. Make the best comic you can make. And then tomorrow, wake up and try to make a slightly better comic. And then even if, no matter what level you're at right now, tomorrow you can make a slightly better one, even if it's incrementally better. Great, because those little incremental steps a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, that's how you get up the mountain.
Yep. In other words, take the first step. How are you going to get there? Take the first step. And then tomorrow, take another step. And then the next day, take another step. By the end of the year, you will have taken 365 steps. And that's a lot of steps, right?
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
compound that. And by the way, pretty soon, one step equals five steps because you're walking faster, you're jogging now, you're running. So it starts to exponentially expand the amount of ground, figuratively speaking, that you can cover, and you'll be doing great things. So the most important thing is to take a step. That's why when we talk to people, there's very few things that actually make us not angry, but it's frustrating. And for me, it was when I went to comic conventions and somebody would come up and say, I want to do a comic, but I don't want to do it because when I put it up on the web, someone's going to steal it. And I'm worried about copyright infringement. And so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
There's nothing that frustrates me like, fear and paralysis, right? When you're too scared to take the step. Because listen, here's the deal. Taking that step means somewhere along those first 365 steps, you're going to trip. And somewhere you're going to stub your toe. And somewhere you're going to fall flat on your face. But here's the deal. For every trip, there's a get back up. For every stub the toe, there's a Band-Aid. For every time you fall on your face, there's not only get up, but at that point, there's maybe somebody nearby saying, oh, I tripped there before. Here, let me help you up. I'll show you the best way to recover from that. But you're never going to get down there. You're never going to get anywhere near that if you're standing at the starting line with fear. And fear is frustrating to me. Fear makes me want to push the person and say, just do it. Take the first step.
Because fear freezes you, whereas it's okay to have sadness or depression or anxiety about your art, but you're doing it. You're making the art. But fear freezes you, and that's why it's the most frustrating, because you're not taking the steps to get up the mountain, you know? Yeah. At least with other actions where you're feeling insecure about your art, you're being insecure about art that's been made, it's been created, it's been done. And so I see what you're saying about fear, because fear stops you. Fear is a stopping emotion.
And don't get it wrong. There's been lots of times when I've been scared. There's been times I've been scared out of my wits.
Yeah.
I still took the step. You know, fear is natural, but when you let it freeze you, then it's bad. You know, and there's so many things you can do that you can recover from. You don't know what you're capable of recovering from yet because you haven't done it.
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't remember who had this quote. It could be from the movie Thor. It could be from the poet Seneca. I don't remember. But somebody said bravery is not the absence of fear. Bravery is the presence of fear and then still doing the thing. That's what bravery is. You know, it's a everybody feels fear. Every artist that you love and cherish that you think is a master of the craft, they feel fear and they feel insecurity and they still create and they work past it. Right. But like even that moment, that stumbling moment where I tried to do licensed T-shirts in LA, 21-year-old Dave meeting a guy in his living room apartment. It was so skeevy and getting paid $50. But here's what I learned from that. I learned from that because I was doing, I was creating, right? I was making this licensed art. What I learned from that is, oh God, there are bad actors in comics. And so what I need to do is to own and control my own business. That literally was one of the key moments in my career where I was like, nope, you know what? You know who's smarter? Dave Kellett. Dave Kellett will figure this out. I'm not going to trust some guy who otherwise would be selling weed out of his living room that they're the business genius that I'm going to be, the you know, attaching my star to. No, thanks. Tom Hanks, I'll figure this out on my own.
Or the guy in the suit that starts spreading out all of his cell phones in front of you as they're waiting for the entree to come.
Oh, my God. That's another key moment. That was another bad actor in comics that we met. I love that you and I keep referring to that dinner conversation because...
I know. I know. I keep going back to it.
Because he was such a bad actor. This was... Sorry, to give everyone some backstory, this was a... I was going to say mid-sized. Not even that. A small comics publisher who met us for dinner, took us out to expensive dinner.
Yeah.
Talked up... just nonsense. And we could see right through him that he was a flimflam man, basically, Brad, right? I mean, that's
But all of those moments, what you really knew is that I know how to do this. I can take that step. I don't need any of this.
Or, Brad, even if you don't know how to do it, even if Brad Geiger doesn't know how to do it, it's better for you to figure it out in an imperfect way than to trust this person that was like clearly not a good guy, right?
And even if it means that you fail and fail miserably, you learn from that. And the things you learn are going to make you so much more powerful down the road.
Yes. Yes. It not only makes you a better business person, it actually makes you a better creator because you have this life experience that you can draw on for a moment when you need to write about conflict or a moment when you need to write about learning a new task or a superhero that's on a journey of discovery about what they can do with their powers. Right. What I'm saying is it makes you a better artist, actually, to try to do these steps on your own. But anyway, so it's funny that this 20-year anniversary for Gloria and I got me thinking about young 20-year-old Dave arriving in LA and wanting it so bad, wanting to be a cartoonist and meeting a few people that either worked for, I don't know, The Simpsons or a newspaper comic strip or Marvel Comics in LA and being like, I want to do some version of what you're doing and how do you get there? And realizing slowly over time, over a few years, that basically it was just putting one foot in front of the other and keep putting the feet forward, just keep working. And as we said, I think on last week's show, the luck sort of increases the more that you put out there and the more you stick with it.
Absolutely. Even if it means, like I said, even if it means taking that first step means that you're going to stub your toe or break your ankle or fall, you're still going in the right direction. You can still get back up. And speaking of injuries, Dave, we've got a $5
transition
Patreon backer.
Master. Hold on. I can't let this go. When you make a transition that is that smooth, I feel like someone should be pouring me a glass of port. Like that was just delightful, Brad. Right? That was silky smooth. Speaking of injuries, let me tell you real quick about our next topic.
It's got injury right here in the title. This person wrote in and said, I think it was Dave who said he used to have an impingement injury or some such. I'm dealing with an overuse injury myself of the hand, wrist, forearm, neck kind. Well, that's the forfecta right there. And it's been prevalent for almost 2+ years. I draw a lot, but I also work out and train a lot in my sport, and I'm sure that adds up. I feel like the only thing I can do to fully heal is take a break from doing anything for at least 2 months, but I can't afford to do that. If comicking is my living, I take breaks and stand and stretch every 25 minutes. And I really every measure I can think of to prolong my hands. Can you speak to me more, Dave, about how you dealt with current or past injuries?
This is a great question. And I think both Brad and I have at times, Brad, you've had recurring dominant use muscle or nerve problems at times, haven't you? Or no? Am I imagining?
I hate answering that because I feel like I'm jinxing myself. But knock on wood, not to a significant extent the way you have.
Yeah. Okay.
Because well, I know with that shoulder thing, you were a different deal.
Yeah, that unfortunately was sort of the next level for me, and in a way that really impacted me for about 3.5 years of my life and kind of still impacts me if I'm being honest about it. So let me speak to my injury and at least the journey that I took, and maybe some of this will be helpful. But again, the big caveat, as the lawyer taps me on the shoulder, I am not a medical professional. I don't know or train in the physical therapy arts. All I can tell you is the journey that I had and what happened. So for me, when I draw, it kind of has the same position as when I type, which is my shoulders roll forward, up and forward, and I sort of hunch. And what that did, as you correctly stated, was it was an impingement injury on my right arm specifically. So there's a massive nerve bundle that travels from your chest kind of in your armpit and then down your arm. And then at the same time, there's also major blood flow. So really within a 2-inch area, there's a lot of really key data and nutrients that travel through this area of your armpit, basically. And I was impinging it by rolling my shoulder forward when I drew, rolling my shoulder forward when I typed. What happened is, over the course of, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, it got worse and worse and worse until eventually my right hand would go ice cold because the blood flow was not full, and it would shake, especially my pinky and my second to last finger. I would be washing dishes, Brad, and I would lose my ability to grip, and so I would drop and break dishes as I
drop a dish.
Yeah, I would drop a dish. Which is frankly disconcerting when it happens a lot.
Well,
when you're losing your ability to grip.
That's because you're a pessimist. I'm an optimist. When that happens to me, it's like, well, I don't have to wash that dish.
That's kind of like, I have messed up enough of Gloria's shirts in the laundry where she's like, you know what? No, champ, go sit down. I'm doing the laundry. And so by accident, I want to be a good husband, but by accident, I've somehow bowed out of having to do laundry because I'm apparently terrible at it and washable. I just throw everything in like, bang it, let's wash it. It's going in. This was silk. I don't know. I just throw it in. This was made out of the hair of a baby rabbit. I don't know. I just throw it in. I've ruined. This is why.
Well,
for me it was
just the opposite. I tried that kind of thing, and my wife said, "Oh no, you don't. You can learn. Now get right back over here. I'm going to show you." I mean, it wasn't laundry, but she said, "You can learn."
I mean, the major problem, as my wife pointed out, is that my entire wardrobe is basically can be capsulized as free T-shirts that I got at a Comic-Con.
Oh, I remember at Patreon, they had free T-shirts. I never saw you move so fast. That you pushed a person out of the way. You were like, your linebacker days came back to you.
You know what? I don't care if she was 80. She needed to move faster to get those T-shirts. She
was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
That lady was between me and a free T-shirt, and that's not where you want to be standing.
No.
So what I was going to, I totally lost my train of thought. Okay, so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was breaking dishes. Let's jump back to that. So I was breaking dishes, and I was cold, and then I had the most incredibly weird nerve damage, Brad, where my right ear, if you just touch your earlobe, like the lower part of your earlobe, just do it for me real quick, right? Okay, now you're touching it with some pressure, right? Now remove the pressure so that all you're touching is the hairs on your ear, the teeny tiny hairs on your ear.
Yeah.
If I did that very specific touch, not touching the skin, but touching the hair on my ears, my nerves were so jacked up that I would feel it in the in the same pinky finger as that ear was on. So if I did it with my left hand to my right ear, I would feel it in my pinky finger. That's how jacked my nerves were, because they didn't know where the signal was coming from, right?
Yeah.
And so my neurologist was like, "What the hell is this? I've only seen this like once or twice. This is weird." Anyway, he goes, "Well, all right, time for physical therapy for you." And unfortunately, that was the answer. Physical therapy, there are stretches that you can only do with the help of another person with your own arm. Like you can, you can position yourself in a doorway. You can position yourself hanging from something. You can backward stretch. You can reverse your body. And yes, it is possible to do it by yourself. But when you have a professional helping you, as I did for 2 years, she would stretch the muscles. I would do some basic physical therapy. I would do foam roller to open it up. By the way, a foam roller for every cartoonist, really cheap investment. I highly recommend it just to open up your chest and your shoulders after you've been drawing. For those who are not familiar, a foam roller is basically a 3 foot long circle tube of foam that you lie back on, and it forces all your muscles back in a very calming and relaxing way. And I highly recommend it. But anyway, only with a therapist, only with electrical stimulus into my shoulder muscles, only with ice and cold and physical therapy did I get better. And it took 2 years of physical therapy, Brad. But and I frankly still have, even as we talk right now, I can feel, if I want to, the sort of tingly that I get at the tips of my fingers. All of which is to say, do not take this lightly. Nerve damage is not something you want to mess around with. Long-term muscle damage is not something you want to mess around with. If you have healthcare, take advantage of it and get this fixed. Taking breaks is great. It works. It helps. But really, once damage starts, it's hard to heal nerve damage. And you might need the help of a professional.
Yeah, I mean, we always kind of made fun of John Buscema as he did that video for How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. But one of the things he took the time to do was he looked right into the camera like a dad and said, sit up straight when you're drawing, sit up straight. And that really was one thing that I improved when I made the switch to digital, because I got my Wacom Cintiq and I got an arm for it. And I purposefully put that way up high, like higher than I'm actually a little bit comfortable drawing, just because it makes me sit up straight so I can actually make a mark on the tablet. What I want to do is put it down and hunch. You know, that's what I want to do. I want to hunch in the worst way. And it's like, nope, asshole, get your butt in that seat. We're going to put this up a little bit higher than you're even comfortable, because you're going to, I always end up pushing it down anyway. And then I've got to remind myself. And that's why it is, like Dave said, 25 minutes or take a break every now and again. You always hear on the public version of the show, we say in the middle of the show, stand up, take a break and stretch. Those are real things. Those are real concerns. Now, the question I've got for you, Dave, and this actually came in from another Kickstarter backer named Kipper. Is there a specific stretch you've found helpful, especially when it comes to your shoulder? Is there one stretch, Dave, that you could teach us, even on a podcast, that we could be using to get better about this?
Yes. So one thing is, like Brad, I had to, especially at my physical therapist direction, I had to change the posture of the way that I draw. And I know that's not what you're asking specifically about stretches, and I'll get to that in a minute. But posture while you draw is fundamental in a way that, like, I know that sounds like dad energy to say that, like, this is super important. I cannot emphasize enough. And here's the thing is that one of the most amazing lessons that I ever learned was actually from this physical therapist, Brad. And I did a whole comic about it because it was about the way we perceive the world versus the way the world actually exists. So she goes, okay, Dave, relax your shoulder. And I go, okay. And she goes, no, I said relax. And I was like, I am relaxed. She goes, no, relax your shoulder. And I said, this is me relaxed. And she goes, oh, dear God. And so what it was I...
You're the first man I've met with clenched hair.
No, but what it taught me is what I had assumed was normal, what I had assumed was okay in terms of posture was not at all okay. And it was not at all normal. I carried my stress in my shoulders. And also, she had me take a video of me working, right?
Yeah.
Because what you think is good posture, set it up at eye level, you know, about 5 feet away from your desk, and just set up your iPhone or whatever and record your video. And you'll be like, oh my God, do I really hunch like that when I'm really drawing?
Right.
Because think that you start off drawing like, look at me, I have good posture. But we all know that when it comes time to do that detail work on a character's face, you get real close, don't you? Don't you? Because I do. We all do it. Just admit you do it. And then what happens is you're hunching forward and your shoulders are rolling forward and your neck is craning in a way that's not healthy. Mm-hmm. So take a video of yourself and you're like, oh my God. And here was the solution for me. I had a beautiful 6 foot wide, I think Brad remembers it, 6 foot wide wooden Mayline drafting table that I had customized. Yeah. It was gorgeous. And I basically got rid of it because I was like, you know what? Sitting is not my friend. I went and custom built a standing drawing table for myself, a drafting table, because my health was that important to me. So that was number one. Now, Stretching. I don't want to take too long on this, but again, foam roller, amazing. Really, really mm-hmm. good. Okay. So that's a one basic one. Watch some basic YouTube videos on how to safely use a foam roller and how to position your arms as you rest on it. That one's great. Secondly, as old as the Roman baths, heat and ice are your friends. If you are having trouble, Brad's face lit up at Roman baths. I'm not going that way, Brad. What I am saying.
I've never been so excited about a physical therapy segment in my life.
All right, here's what I'm going to need you to do. You got to get totally naked. Here's what, okay, now. All right, you're going to want a little white loincloth right just hanging in front of the bits and kibbles in front of you there. Now, you're naked, but you got the little loin thing hanging in front of the bits and kibbles. All right, so you're getting into the bath. No.
Now you're going to need a little 10W-40.
Oh, my God, Brad. I got to tell you one time, not now, but I'll tell you the story at some point about the time that I went to a Roman bath in Budapest. And it was amazing. It was an amazing story, and it's delightful. A Roman bath, one of the things the Romans figured out is they had a frigidarium and they had a caldarium. And the frigidarium was, you're going to get freaking cold in that pool. And then you would go to the caldarium and you would be like, good God, this is hot. And then you go back to the frigidarium, and it does help your muscles contract, expand in a way that is relaxing and ultimately healthy for the muscles. And so after you've been drawing a little bit of heat, a little bit of ice, a little bit of heat, a little bit of ice, and you can find YouTube videos from better physical therapists than I am that will help you with that. Mm-hmm. And then finally, some good stretches to open up your shoulder are the classic stand in the doorway, hold the doorway, slowly rotate your body away from that door frame while you're still holding on so that it's pulling your shoulder back and down, if you know what I mean. It's impossible mm-hmm. in a podcast to describe that, but basically look for doorway stretches for arms and you'll come up with a couple things. Basically, you need something that helps to isolate and stretch out that muscle that's been rolling forward.
Absolutely. That's a great way to, and by the way, just keeping that in mind and knowing that this is a long time deal that you're getting into if you want to go into comics, and your ability to do that and to make it to that top of the mountain that we were talking about in the previous segment is going to be predicated on your ability to stay healthy and to do this for the long term.
Yes.
Because it doesn't get any easier. As somebody who's crossed over 50, I can tell you, these things don't just go away. You've got to actually take an active role in addressing these problems, hopefully trying to do things so they don't become problems in the first place. If they do, addressing them right off the bat, because they don't go away. And that's gonna make it a lot easier once you do find yourself a little bit further up that mountain. You're not gonna be hindered by stuff like physical ailments.
Yeah, and really, I will co-sign Brad's advice that it does not go away on its own. You've got to take care of it, and it's not something to take lightly. You can take that from two guys who are increasingly looking like the Crypt Keeper. This stuff doesn't go away. It gets worse with time. So I will say, you know what, Brad? I actually feel bad. I can't drop the whole Budapest Roman bath story and not tell that story. So I'm going to launch into it.
It's about time. Yeah.
All right. So this is kind of fun. So 10 friends and I went down. We were studying in London. Notre mm-hmm. Dame had this like overseas program where you could study in London for 6 to 12 months or whatever it was, right? So I got a job at a pub. I'm studying in London. And someone goes, hey, who wants to go see Eastern Europe? And so we get on because, you know, Europe is really good with these student rail passes. You can spend like $20 and travel all around Europe. So we were living on baguettes and, you know, $5 a day, basically traveling around Eastern Europe. And we get to Budapest, and my friend Aditya goes, hey, who wants to go on a Roman bath? And we all go, hooray, let's try it. Now, keep in mind, Brad, there is no one who is less comfortable being naked than Dave Kellett. I hate it. I hate being naked. And no one who is less comfortable being touched by a stranger than Dave Kellett, right? Someone's like, who wants to go get a massage? I'm like, no, F that. I'd rather get beaten up in an alley than have a massage, right? So, by the way, why is that
you're
better?
Gonna,
I don't know
you're
why.
You're going to touch me. You better touch me with your fists, buddy.
So anyway, we go to the Roman bath. We try the caldarium. We try the frigidarium. We try the whatever it is. And then I guess with the token, you also got a free massage, right? And so I'm wearing the little loincloth, which is literally just a spaghetti strap back around your ass and then a flap of white paper loincloth in front of the
It's like less of a bath towel, more of a dish towel.
Well, you know what it is? Remember the cloth napkins that your grandmother had for 30 years that have been laundered so much that the fabric is actually kind of vaguely see-through?
Yeah. She might as well have handed you a doily.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like, just be naked. Why are we wearing these things? So anyway, we had the little white flap in front of the bangers and mash.
The cheesecloth.
The cheesecloth. Yes. And someone goes, oh, hey, Aditya goes, hey, Dave, it's your turn. They're ready for you in the massage room. And I was like, wait, what? I did not sign up for this. But I go in and there is a guy, Brad, do you remember comic books? Like, you too can be a strong man. And it was like the classic strong man, not the guy nowadays who is ripped, but the guy who has, frankly, an extra 100 pounds on him, but could also lift a piano. You know, that kind of strong.
Right.
There's this
like
guy,
Russian bear strong.
Yes, exactly. The guy that he has a gut, but he's also oddly strong, right?
Yeah.
And so he he's this gigantic Hungarian guy, and he kind of gruntingly yells at me in Magyar. He goes, "Hala!" And I can't speak Magyar, so I'm obviously just going to make something approximating his. He was just going, "Hala!" And I go, okay. And so I lie down on the sort of massage bed thing or whatever, right? And he starts just, Brad, beating the living crap out of my back. Like, imagine a guy who can bench press like 400 pounds just wailing on you like Hulk beating on the Hulkbuster, you know, just like wailing on my back. I'm like, oh, God, why did I sign up for this? Oh,
like the first time Hulk met Loki.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And then all of a sudden he goes still and I'm like, all right, what's going on? And he yells at me again in Magyar. Ha! And I go, what? I don't speak Magyar. Ha! And then I realized only afterward that he was asking me to flip over and because I didn't speak Magyar, he didn't know what to do. So he grabbed me like a small child and threw me up in the air to flip me over. And so suddenly, without knowing what the hell was going on, I'm midair naked with this loincloth flap. And then I go, whoop, back down on the table. And then he starts beating on my leg, like the legs and chest and stuff. And I'm like, I come out of there. And Aditya goes, how'd you like that massage? Wasn't that great? I was like, Aditya, I feel like I just paid to get beat up by a guy from the works in a circus. Like, that dude was gigantic. He was just yelling at me in Magyar. That was the worst experience of my life.
Now, did she have the same experience?
Oh, no, Aditya was a guy. So there was 5 guys and 5 girls, and we had to split up. And because they were gender split, and so all the 5 guys went in one direction and the 5 girls went in another direction. And they all had like like rose water filled. Meanwhile, I'm getting beat up by a guy who's a stand-in as a Hollywood roadie. I don't know what, but anyway, so I came out of there. I'm like, well, I'm never going to a Roman bath again. That was terrible. I do not want to do that again.
Never doing that again. I'm glad I made it out with my life. Well, listen, you've made it out with your life at the end of another episode of Comic Lab. This is the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
And both Brad and I wish you all the best. At some point in your life, may you get yelled at by a large man in Magyar, because it is a uniquely wonderful experience. Your host has been my friend Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my good friend, the newly tenderized Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped. And the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And just a reminder that the sponsor of today's show is the good folks over at Bonjoro, BONJORO.com. You can go try the 14-day free trial right away. And if that's working for you, and I strongly think it will, you're going to want to try Comic Lab April and the coupon code to get 20% off for the rest of your life. And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode.
And Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that, like Dave getting a massage in Hungary. Oh, God, why did I choose to do this? This is terrible.
Oh, I regret my choices.
Oh, why? What path in life led me to this moment? Oh, God, this is not pleasurable. Oh, jeez.
How do you celebrate a 20-year anniversary? Probably cuddle.
Oh.